Nassim Nicholas Taleb, the anti-confidence man. On the 20th of March of this year, there was a profile of this great Lebanese-American, Nassim Taleb, someone who, if you're listening to this on this podcast feed, may not be aware how influential of a person he's been on the way, I think, but also just on my life generally, I guess. He wrote a series of five books, which together is titled The Inserto. And the ideas within those five books have been the most transformative on determining the way that I see the world. And so, on the 28th of March, 2023, The Spectator published this profile on the man, Nassim Nicholas Taleb. The author of this profile was the great Rosie Gray. She's a terrific journalist out of New York. And I was very, very surprised to get an email from her one day asking to be interviewed for this profile. Because if you're listening here in the Curious World podcast, you might not be aware, but I have a separate podcast called the Nassim Taleb and Inserto podcast, where there's about 30, 40 episodes of me just doing little monologues on the different ideas from the five books that make up the Inserto. So Rosie had come across that and decided, all right, well, maybe Ryan will be worthwhile interviewing for this profile. And so I was very lucky to get a chance to be interviewed by her. We sat down for about 30 minutes, and from that chat, a little bit of it actually ended up making its way into the Spectator piece on Taleb. So a very surreal moment for me. Again, it feels like another high watermark for this podcasting journey so far. But the profile is just absolutely terrific. You get a look into Taleb like you wouldn't have seen elsewhere, and certainly not before. And so I really wanted to talk with Rosie about what it was like putting this together. So it's a short little podcast today, but it's just me interviewing Rosie, asking about the research to get this profile done, how she got in touch with Taleb in the first place, what Taleb's like as a bloke, and then a little bit about how the Inserto has influenced her. So that is this episode. There's no timestamps. It's a short one. Pump your good juice into the algorithm. Leave a review on this podcast for me. Leave a review for Rosie. And go to The Spectator and read her article. It will be in the podcast descriptions. With absolutely no further ado, here is the great Rosie Gray. All right, Rosie. To start us off, Taleb is a famously media-averse guy. How did you convince him to do a profile?
To be honest, it took a lot less convincing than I thought it was going to. I basically emailed him and, you know, however many months ago, and said, this is what I'm interested in doing. And he agreed pretty quickly. So I'm, you know, I was surprised as well.
What was the content of the cold email? Was there something remarkable in there that you think?
I don't have it in front of me. And I basically said sort of that I was, you know, wanted to do this piece that I'd been discussing doing with The Spectator about him and about kind of his influence and, you know, sort of like how he's remained relevant over this, you know, rather long period of time. And he agreed to do it. And that said, I mean, you know, and I did talk about this in the piece, the actual scheduling of the interview turned out to be like the complicated part, but.
Because I think that the only other big profile in a significant publication of him was Malcolm Gladwell for The New Yorker back in the 90s or something, or early 2000s at least. So, I don't know. You're in very sort of rarefied air by getting him on the record and capturing at a moment in the culture.
Mm-hmm. He's certainly done other interviews since that Gladwell piece. Like, there was a different New Yorker piece that was maybe a couple years ago of him talking about basically the pandemic and why he doesn't believe that it's a black swan event. And yeah, you know, there was, I think when Anti-Fragile came out, there was like some press around it, some interviews that he gave. So like he does, it's not that he never does them, but you're right that the Gladwell piece from, I mean, it must be like 20 years old at this point.
I think so.
But yeah, that it's one of the only ones that's sort of been like a really in-depth profile of him.
Yeah. Did you want to go deeper? Did you really want to do like a, you know, 5,000-6,000 word piece?
I'm, you know, if that had been like the assignment, then yeah, but that kind of isn't, you know, what was decided upon. I think that would have been really cool too. It would have been like a little bit of a different kind of piece. But I thought that the piece worked well at the length that it was.
You say that wasn't the assignment. So how does it actually work as a journalist working for a magazine like that? Is it a collaboration between you and your editor, or is it sort of top down? This is what I think you're good at, what you should do.
Definitely. I mean, in this case, like collaborative, like kicking ideas back and forth. And then, you know, deciding like A, to do it, and B, kind of like what the format will be, like kind of like lengthwise, how many words are about, that kind of thing. But no, I mean, you know, I'm a freelance journalist, so if somebody tells me to do something, like I don't have to, you know?
Yeah, right. Was it you, the sort of driving force behind this project?
It was initially my idea. And then I kind of set it aside for a while. I was working on other things, but I had mentioned it to The Spectator at some point. And then when I was talking with my editor there, you know, a few months ago, he was like, oh, do you remember that like idea that you had about Nassim Taleb? Like, would you be interested in doing that? And then, you know, went from there. Pretty basic kind of interaction.
Mm-hmm. And where'd your interest in Taleb come from in the first place?
You know, he was someone that I like had obviously seen a lot of online. You know that he's a very active like Twitter power user. I had gotten, you know, like interested in sort of that public persona of his, which is just like so different from like how most kind of quote unquote public intellectuals behave, right? Sort of what he has to say is also very different. And then I started like looking at his work. And you know, I find his books really interesting. Like it's hard to put them in any one category or genre, which again, like I think makes what he's doing like just feel very different from what other authors kind of who might be thought of generally in that space from what they're doing. Right. You know, he's, you know, obviously very erudite, like really drawing upon like a lot of references from culture and history. But at the same time, he can be very like frank and very like, all right, well, here's the deal, like deadlifting, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I think that like, you know, and it's just an interesting mix. At the same time, like he obviously ruffles a lot of feathers. Like there are very fair critiques to be made of sort of like how he, you know, like operates on Twitter or wherever. And I just think that he's an interesting character. So it was something that I had been, you know, and definitely the fact that he doesn't give a lot of interviews and that that aspect also made it sort of like more intriguing to me to write about him.
Yeah, there's definitely a mysteriousness about him. Like, who is the man behind everything that he's saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. The kind of distance or not between someone's like public facing persona versus like who they really are is always very interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah, because you get these autobiographical parts throughout the inserto, but to get this like traditional long form interview done with him, to be able to see, you know, what was it like? I mean, I'm pretty sure he's in the Christian minority of Lebanon. Was from some sort of, you know, aristocratic family. Aristocratic's probably the wrong word, but at least like upper class family during the Lebanon Civil War. It would have been like intensely fascinating to actually hear him reflect explicitly to those direct questions about it.
You mean about...
Did you discover anything in your research?
You mean about like who he... Like his background and who he is?
The man behind the ideas, yeah.
Yeah, I mean like we talked a bit about Lebanon, about, you know, his upbringing. He still goes to Lebanon quite often, is my understanding. I was also kind of focused on trying to get a sense of, you know, just his personality as well, and kind of like what makes him tick in the moment, because he has written a lot about his upbringing in the Lebanese Civil War, and I did get definitely a sense of his, I did definitely a sense of his personality. I mean, like, first I had sort of an off the record, not really off the record, just more like he didn't want me to record it, which I wrote about the piece, lunch with him in December, which was like really fun. Like, he's a great like lunch partner, you know, like he's very like,
yeah, good conversationalist.
Very, and you know, he's kind of like a gourmand and he like knows all the right dishes to order. And you know, he's also like, he's a very like polite, like, you know, this very abrasive online thing that he does doesn't really come through at all in a, you know, person to person way, like very courtly and polite. And then, yeah, like I did the sort of like more formal interview with him over Zoom later on. And, you know, he was very generous with his time and all of that. He was about to go cycling, which is like his new obsession. Like, he's not just a weightlifter anymore. Now he's a cyclist as well. And, and yeah, I mean, like, what I would say is that he, like I said, like, you know, in person, like, he's very, you know, like that confrontational nature is like, it's a little bit different. Like, you do feel though, like you're kind of on your toes a bit. Like, you kind of like, you feel like you need to kind of like know what you're talking about, because he knows what he's talking about a lot of the time.
Yeah. So you get the sense that if you sort of put your foot wrong, he won't just let it slide. He's going to call you out on it.
Right. Exactly. That you'll, you know, like,
did you have any of those moments?
Yeah. I mean, like, points where, you know, I felt like maybe like he was surprised that I didn't understand something, or I can't think of like specifics now, but you definitely feel as though you have to kind of like keep up a little bit intellectually. I mean, like, I put this in the piece, but at one point he was saying, you know, I was just asking what he'd been up to. He was like, oh, I wrote these two papers about X, Y, and Z so far this year. And I knew I wasn't going to understand like what these papers were about, because like, I'm not a statistician. And I was like, can you explain to me, like, I'm 5 years old, what they're about? And he goes, well, you're not 5 years old. So that's kind of the vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he name drop any of his big famous friends in the time that you were speaking with him?
Nothing that's really springing to mind at the moment. There was a separate interview that I did with Tom Holland, the historian, who's a friend of Taleb's, who mentioned this like weird night that they had hanging out with Brian Eno, the, you know, legendary music producer. And he was like, oh no, but you need to check with Taleb, because like, I don't like remember the details. And I checked with him, not expecting him to like come back with the exact thing that happened, but like, within a few minutes, he was like, yes, of course that happened. And like, actually, we ended up like writing these like open letters to each other about like various topics that we had like debated. I looked it up and yeah, that all happened. So Brian Eno is probably the only like broadly famous person that I can think of that kind of came up.
In your off the record first meeting with him, one of the names you mentioned that you spoke about was Elon Musk. Did you get a sense for what Taleb thought about broadly who Elon Musk is?
I didn't get much of a, like, I think we just sort of like the, it was still kind of in the thick of the Twitter news, like being a hot topic. And we were just sort of like talking about that. So nothing juicy I think I can share.
Okay. It'd just be fascinating to hear, because there's clearly an element of Musk that he would deeply admire. Like intense skin in the game, but then as well, I think a couple of red flags, which I, you know, would be keen to hear. But talk a little bit about the research you had to do to put the piece out.
You know, I don't think, you know, I don't, it wasn't necessarily like the most, it wouldn't probably be the most thrilling process to watch from the outside, like just making sure that I had a handle on, you know, his work and like basically reading everything that had been written about him, you know, within reason. I mean, I'm sure I missed some stuff, but, and then, you know, doing other interviews for the piece and, you know, just basically like a pretty, pretty bog standard reporting process.
Yeah. You asked a question explicitly in our interview, how he had like influenced me or shaped my worldview. I wonder if you've had a similar experience by ingesting the various ideas throughout the inserter, whether it has actually influenced the way you see the world or influenced the way you behave?
It's a really good question. I don't know about like influence, but I do find myself definitely thinking about some of his ideas. And they are the type of concepts that do sort of like stick in your head. And I think, you know, overall, as I wrote, there is something like very, you know, beguiling about, and this is something that you mentioned when I interviewed you about, you know, the idea that like chance and risk can be something that are some things that are like not necessarily scary or bad, you know, that it's, there can be serendipity in your life that you can like sort of make these things work for you and like control what you can control. So as far as influence, I don't really know how to answer that question per se, but I definitely think that like his work has like offered a lot of food for thought.
Oh, undoubtedly. I really liked a line from the piece that Taleb is the antidote to the confidence man. I think a very nice way of putting it, because that actually does describe him very well and also explains a lot of the antagonists he ends up going up against.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we live in a time where there's a lot of people who are, you know, whether explicitly or implicitly kind of like trying to sell something, you know, and, you know, pushing something for some sort of like ulterior motive, whether it's money or clout or whatever. And there's a lot of kind of like bullshit artists out there. And whatever you think of Taleb and the way that he kind of conceptualizes this, like, you know, he definitely has like an allergy to certain kinds of bullshit that is, you know, can be refreshing. You know, and I think it's sometimes it can be a little bit like seriously, like the part where he was talking about how, you know, he plans out his Twitter fights like months or sometimes years in advance. He's like, you know, it's just like, what a way to live, you know, like I can't imagine like living that way. And so that's like very sort of funny and interesting, but in general, yes. I mean, like, I think that there's a kind of attitude that he has of sort of like trying to kind of get to the meat of the matter, like get to the heart of something and like see through bullshit is something that can be like interesting to watch.
That detail of him planning out his Twitter fights runs totally in contrary to the caricature that I developed in my mind, where he has this huge brazen public persona, which totally neatly fits into the persona of the one developed in Skin in the Game. But contrary to all of the anecdotes I've heard about from people interacting with him personally, just, you know, sort of just polite, sort of respectful guy. But to be planning out your Twitter fights, it does suggest a little bit of enjoyment out of the attention you get from these media Twitter fights, because what are you getting out of them apart from, you know, the nice cheap dopamine of attention?
Well, yeah, it definitely suggests that, right? I mean, like, you know, it's you can't really like put yourself above it all if you're kind of like doing that sort of thing.
Planning right, them out. Yeah. So do you, since if you would agree that, yeah, it definitely suggests he likes the attention he gets from these Twitter fights, which is, you know, broadly distributed through different media, can you give an explanation for why he doesn't do more media, more podcasts? Why we only see him occasionally on Bloomberg or on an extremely obscure, like, talk? You know, he gave his reasons for not wanting to go on Lex Fridman. Maybe other people haven't invited him, but surely there are big platforms of hosts he could respect enough to go on. Did you ever get into that?
I mean, you know, you would need to ask him. But I mean, like, I wouldn't necessarily know how to answer that. I mean, the one thing I would say is that again, like, it's not like he never, like you mentioned, like he does go on Bloomberg and things like that. And like he does do the occasional interview here and there. So it's not like it's, like a once in a lifetime interview with like, Thomas Pynchon or like someone like that who literally never does. It's like I would say it seems like he's just sort of, I don't know, fairly selective or like prefers to do certain types of interviews and not others or whatever, but I wouldn't want to answer for him.
Did you ever talk to him about podcasts? Get a sense for what he thinks about that whole medium?
Well, we did talk about podcasts for like 1 second because we were just talking about like podcasts that we both like. He mentioned The Rest is History, which is his friend Tom Holland's podcast that he does with another historian, and a BBC radio show that I also listen to that also gets released in podcast form. It's called In Our Time. Have you ever listened to In Our Time?
No.
Oh, it's really, you would, I think you would really like it. It's great. It's this host, Melvin Bragg, and every week he has on three different like scholars on, a topic. It's never topical too. Like it never has anything to do with the news. It'll be like, the War of 1812, or it'll be like
Nice,
astrophysics or whatever, like something totally different each week. And they just like really like just talk about it for like 45 minutes. And it's just really great. But other than that, did I talk about like podcasts per se with him? No.
Get a sense for what he thinks broadly about the medium.
I did not get a sense of that, no.
No. Okay, well, look, what about his response to the profile? Did he say anything to you about what he thought about it?
I sent it to him when it came out, and he said that he thought it was good. So I was like a little bit surprised because I assumed that he would probably find something like to,
No.
nitpick about it, but he seemed fine with it. And I think he retweeted it.
Not, yeah, he did. He definitely did.
Yeah, but fairly, fairly muted reaction, I would say.
And what about your own response in your own life to it?
I think it, I have no idea like what, how it did like traffic wise or anything like that, but from what I could tell, it seemed like it was going around on Twitter a decent amount. And, I heard from people who read it and liked it, and it overall seems to have, it seems I'm happy with the reaction that it got.
Nice. Well, look, Rosie, anything left on the table worth saying about the profile? Something I didn't touch?
No, I think that about covers it. Thanks so much for, inviting me on, and thanks again for letting me interview you for the piece.
All right, mate. It was amazing. Cheers.
Cheers.